On this episode of Football 301, Matt Harmon joins me as we recap week two. And we do a little take poker, take blackjack, take gambling game. I don't know. I should know. I live in Vegas, but that's what we do. We either stand pat, we fold, or we double down on some of our preseason takes. Plus a little rookie quarterback and receiver check-in at the end of the show. See you guys in a minute. Hello and welcome to Football 301. I am Nate Tice. We have our week two recap show here today. Mr. Matt Harmon is going to be joining me for that. We're also at the tail end of the show. We talk about a little rookie check-in, quarterbacks, receivers, the premium positions, as people like to say, the fun positions, the fantasy positions. But before we do that, we're going to do a little take blackjack, which is looking back at some of our takes that we've had the last 6 weeks, last 2 months, whether we're going to stand on them, fold them, or double down, raise. It was originally take poker, but we moved it to blackjack. But double down sounds a little bit better. But like I said before, to help me do that, to do the take blackjack, to talk about the rookies, is Mr. Matt Harmon himself. How are you doing today, Matt?
Nate, I'm doing great. We were talking this morning, you and I, about how nice it is to actually have some games and some data to really dive into. Two games, baby. Yeah, went back and binge watched a few offenses on film today, a few defensive units as well, to kind of really test myself on some of these preseason takes. And yeah, it's a mixed bag, as it always is. You know, sometimes, Nate, I feel like you see week one and immediately you're just, well, that's enough of that. Was totally wrong on that one. And sometimes you got to let things play out and be patient. So there's a little mix of that today.
I'm sure a lot of people were saying you're confirming your priors or holding on to your priors, but there is gonna be some of that. But there's gonna be some I'm casting away and just understanding, cutting my losses. I've lived in Vegas long enough to understand when you cut your losses. So this is a great show to do that. So like I said before, we're gonna revisit, you know, a good amount of our takes. Some of them are gonna be more about players, some are about, you know, what teams and maybe positions and stuff that we, you know, we're playing our flags on. Some are a little bold, maybe a little less, but once like I said before, we're going to go over each and every one of them to start. And this is a relevant piece of news with Bryce Young being benched, is one of my favorite takes of yours in the last month or so, which was just because it was just so bold and I loved it. Matt,
stupid.
We're going to read each other's takes too, just to dig it in a little bit more. So Matt, your take was Diontae Johnson was the most important player acquisition in the entire NFL, not for the Panthers, the entire NFL. Matt, are we standing on this unfolding or double downing on the Diontae Johnson take?
Never, Nate, let the record show. I will do whatever it takes to have a good show and to be relevant, okay? I will do things for the good of the show always, because I made myself the sacrificial lamb here to put this at the top. Just
you're
so
my
we can
sacrificial
discuss-
ex.
Yeah. Hey, I'm just clearing out space for you to get wide open, Nate. I will take that safety up the boundary every single time. You want to throw up the seam? I got him over here on the sideline. No worries about it. But yeah, man, look, obviously I'm going to fold on this take. to be fair, it was obviously in our take shopping, kind of episode. So more of like, do I really think this? Probably not. But let's be about it anyways. Because the real thing is that it did not work in the intended use of it here, and that Diontae Johnson was going to be the guy, part of the big reason why Bryce Young made a second year leap. Bryce Young's not going to make a second year leap because he's been benched after two games. Okay, 3.2 yards per attempt on Sunday. That is 0.2 yards fewer than the least efficient run game in the NFL last year in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, it's just, Nate, you know this being around the game, teams can lie to you as fans, teams can lie to other teams can lie to players out in the open market or draft prospects and things like that. They certainly, they'll lie to you about injuries for sure. The one thing they can't do is lie to the other players. And I think as soon as you saw, I don't know if you know this about me, Nate, but I grew up as a Panthers fan, so I couldn't care less about Carolina now. I haven't had an emotional attachment to that franchise probably in like a decade. But
it's good. It's healthy.
Very healthy. But I still follow a good bit of Panthers media and keep up with some of the fans on Twitter and things like that. The instant you saw, especially like Joe Person from The Athletic, who's covered the team forever, saying after the game on Sunday, they might have to consider benching Bryce Young just so they don't lose the locker room. And when you go back and watch it on film, you see why that is, because this is not credible football, what Bryce Young is doing back there. So, yeah, I'm folding on this take. I don't think Deontay Johnson will go down as the most important player acquisition in the NFL, but I am at least interested to see what this offense looks like with Andy Dalton under center.
Yeah, he's competent. You can, again, you want to be evaluating some of these young guys they took, even if we are always, what is that guy? Does he work there? With Bryce Young, and this was, going back to last year's draft process, and I'm not trying to victory lap this or anything. I went Stroud and Richardson as 1-2, and I had a little drop off to Bryce. And I came around on him because I did think he was very smart and he understand how to play quarterback and all those things. But this was the head versus heart argument. My head won out on it, but still I understand why others were like, well, he is a creator and that's what you kind of need in today's NFL. There are size and athleticism thresholds in pro sports for a reason, not just the NFL, just NBA, baseball, what other sports that you want to look at. And some of this is, I think some people see the money ball scene with the old scouts with the earpieces and they're like, oh, these old scouts, they don't know what they're talking about. And some of that is true, but some of these things that scouts have discovered about having thresholds for positions matters. Not only just size as far as height, but weight. And that was the thing I just kept coming back to with Bryce Young, was his weight was so small that the only historical comparison I could find was Doug Flutie, who washed out of the league, ended up in the CFL, and then had a second career with the Bills, late in a career, and then was drop kicking for the Patriots at like 40 years old. But Bryce Young didn't have, like with the smaller guys that he was compared to, Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, he didn't have their arm. Like, he is an average arm at best. Those guys have good arms on the scouting scale. I would say maybe very good at times, especially with their deep balls. So if you're going to be an outlier, a Devontae Smith, a Marvin Harrison Jr. or a senior, all these guys that Aaron Donald, as far as height and weight too with him, you have to be exceptional in other areas, truly exceptional. You have to have a strong arm. You have to be a freak athlete. You have to be super strong, super quick. Bryce was average at best in all those. So, and he was maxed out. He was groomed to be a quarterback since he was like 5 years old. We heard enough about the S2 stuff.
Oh, that's a great
point. I know. And that was why I kind of was hedging on him. I was like, I'll take him in the back half of the first round. I never take him in the first round. It was just more, I would rather throw a dart in the 20s than number one overall, because that's what you're chasing, is the needle mover. And so, yeah, I it's just kind of one of those where he didn't get set up for any success. But the thing was, there wasn't really that ceiling to chase anyway. So I just want to kind of like talk about Bryce Young a little bit, because I reviewed his first year this summer, and it was just kind of like, I don't see a lot of paths here, guys. Maybe Alex Smith, like 10% chance of Alex Smith here. And that's all I had. And Alex Smith, again, is 6'3", 230. And again, so I wanted to get that out there.
When Tom Pelissero tweeted out the graphic, like the first one to break the news yesterday that they were benching Bryce Young, and tweeted out the graphic of Andy Dalton and Bryce Young standing next to each other. I know this, I don't want to be piling on the guy either.
I know. I'm not trying to be mean about this. I'm just stating
he seems like a great guy. And
awesome,
like,
dude.
Obviously wish him the best. I almost kind of wish, Nate, that some team, like that the Panthers would just get rid of him before the trade deadline. Like, trade him to Miami. Let Mike McDaniel try to do another reclamation project while Tua's out. Something like that. Just get him out of there, man, because I think it's toxic. But again, even just looking at the picture they tweeted out of Dalton, who's 6'2", 220. He's not freaking Anthony Richardson or anything. I'm like, that's a much bigger human being. And yeah, I just come back to something I said on the show this summer, which is that for me, I think about quarterback play less so much about the throws you make and the throws you take. It's the throws that you're leaving on the field. And I think that's been the difference, really, just in two games, between what we saw last year, where there really weren't a lot of answers on the field for him. There were really not a lot of players separating or, windows to throw into. I think so far this year, it has not been perfect in Carolina from a protection standpoint. I don't know that he's always had great answers against pressure or checkdowns, things like that, but I think there are throws that he's not taken this year, which is that's when it gets problematic.
Yeah, he knows what he is, which is the issue. that's kind of the double-edged sword of all of it. All right, but moving off of Bryce Young and Deontay Johnson, I do want to add a buffer to Matt. That was us tilting our shoulders back for that take, so it wasn't like you were putting your chest out on that one. I just want to make sure everyone knows that, but it is fun to address it again. Here's what I had my chest out a little bit on this one, but it was kind of tempered, and I'll let you read this one off for me, Matt.
Yeah, and of course, man, we're just going down. Let's beat up on Matt here to start the show, which is totally fine, by the way.
Don't worry. I got a couple coming.
Nate Tice, you believe that the Vikings will make the playoffs, and we just have in parentheses here, plus Sam Darnold. So through two games here, the Sam Darnold oligarchs are rising above the crowd, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm standing pat on this one, not double downing, because like we talked about Sam Darnold last week a little bit, was that he was solid plus. And again, this week, solid plus. He had one little Sam Darnold moment on a pitch, two guys went on motion. And I didn't see that live. I finally just watched it on All 22, and I was just like, oh my God. See, that is so classic Sam Darnold. And usually what would happen would he'd follow up with another interception because he'd just try and overcompensate for it. And it was kind of cool to see him kind of calm down, do some things, but that's the Sam Darnold experience. You're going to get one, maybe two of those a game where you're just like, what? Why are you the way you are? Like that. That's what I always want to ask him. But then you get to see the seam throws to Jalen Naylor that breaks a cover two pole runner, and it's just beautiful. And it's like, that's why you chase Sam Darnold. But looking at the Vikings, and we talked about the run game last week on the Film Room show and Aaron Jones, and this run game really has me optimistic. It, along with Justin Jefferson, along with Sam Darnold being solid plus, this offensive line I think has been solid so far. But the Vikings right now are first in rushing success rate on design running back runs. So take out QB runs. 54.8% on 42 runs. That is outstanding. That is anything over 50 is excellent. So that is crazy good. They had the fifth lowest stuff rate, which is zero negative yards. Last year, they're at 19%. This year at 9.5%. I get sample size, all these things, but it is looking better. The eye test is matching this. 10 or more yard runs. Last year, 8.9%. This year, they're at 19%. Runs where the running back reached 15 miles an hour or more. And this was the big thing about why we had some optimism on this, because Aaron Jones and Ty Chandler have way more juice than Alexander Mattison. They had 30 of those runs total all of last year where a running back reached 15 miles an hour or more. They have 13 of them already this season through two games. 30 all of last year, 13 through two games, 1/8 of the season. We're not even at 1/8 of the season. So I am optimistic about that offense. And I think it's, again, I don't know if it's going to be like a top five, but really what they're looking at right here, okay, this is good enough to be a playoff team. The defense is fun. The defense is the equalizer. Brian Flores really gave Purdy a lot of issues. He really struggled against the blitz. He had a couple of answers, but there's a couple of times he was really guessing. Ironically, the whole seeing ghost thing with Sam Darnold in there. But I'm really liking it. I don't think the Vikings defense is going to be excellent. You can run on them pretty easily. 49ers showed that. But if you get in passing downs, they have your number. They're going to have a lot of teams' numbers unless you have a dude at quarterback. So they're going to be in a lot of games. I don't think they're a contender or anything, but I think this is in the wide open NFC. They have a very valid chance of obviously being 2-0, but a very valid chance of making the playoffs now.
Yeah, I'm definitely folding on some of my Vikings skepticism overall, not just because honestly of the Sam Darnold stuff, which almost more of a bit than a real take here, because what's really impressive about the Vikings, I think, and an area where I missed on them so far through 2 weeks, is that first of all, my big concern about Darnold and just the whole thing of it is they don't have their full deck, right? Because like TJ Hawkinson is not playing. We don't know when he's going to be out there. You know, Jordan Addison hasn't been active for both games. Justin Jefferson even missed some time at the end of last game. Aaron Jones even missed some time at the end of last game. And yet still the machine rolls on, which I think is a huge credit to Kevin O'Connell. And I think the most impressive thing of Kevin O'Connell's tenure so far is because we just talked about Bryce Young and the Panthers moving on very quickly, which I give Dave Canales a lot of credit for that as well, even if it may not have totally been his decision. Still, the biggest thing is that we see teams do all the time is get stuck in sunk cost, you know, and for head coaches, it happens all the time, especially with your guys. You know, Kevin O'Connell comes to Minnesota. He hires Ed Donatell in year one, and they win a lot of games with him as a defense coordinator. They still move on. They hire Brian Flores, who, I mean, that's got to be one of the best. It's got to be one of the best hires of the last couple of seasons. And
it really is.
That's where I liked a lot of what I saw out of Brian Flores' defense in year one. It was like a chaos creator. I always said they put bad quarterbacks in a blender because they would just throw you. They would throw stuff at the wall almost just to see what sticks. You know, they'd show one look pre-snap and then back off into something completely else. They would show pressure looks and then play coverage behind it. And I was like, are they still going to do that once they get better players? or are they going to kind of go a little more conservative? I think they've still leaned into it, which has been incredible to see, even more because now they have better players. So that part of it, I think, is O'Connell's quietly. We'll always talk about offense and elevating quarterbacks and all those things, elevating the run game, which you're so right to point out. Ty Chandler and Aaron Jones are both top six in success rate on zone rushing plays
really
among guys who have 10 plus or 15 plus carries. So just incredible work there. But really, I think his best move might have been to hire Flores as defense coordinator.
It really, yeah. And it's really cool when you get the same characters in the defense or the offense and you can see them adding layers. They had a third and extra long where Brock Purdy ended up checking it down and just kind of throwing it hot to George Kittle. And on that play, they're waiting. The Vikings defenders, Purdy checks and, you know, taps his helmet, and you can tell they had something planned. And every Vikings defensive player just started, like, and you could tell at the Met, or I almost said the Metrodome. Oh my God. The US Bank Stadium was just going nuts. Like, the camera's shaking, and you see them all yelling, communicating, but no one hesitated. It wasn't like, what? What? It was everybody knew exactly what to do. And it's those little things that you look for. It's like, okay, that's a really good sign that you're doing something really funky, and everyone knew what to do. So the signal is eagle, by the way. That was the signal. And I think they call it Eagle Front. So that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, Brock Purdy against the blitz. He went 10 of 15 for 91 yards, a pick, and he was sacked four times.
Four sacks, man. That's crazy. Did you see the clip of him after the game where he went up to Flores and said, man, the scheme is crazy. Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool.
That's saying something. That's pretty cool. I love that. All right. Here's a good one for you. This one you got to be feeling pretty good about. Aiden Hutchinson. All right, this is a Matt take. Aiden Hutchinson will win Defensive Player of the Year. How are you feeling about this one right now?
I'm 100% doubling down.
Yeah, I love it.
almost because I recognize that he has been a bit of a backup tackle killer so far. You know, that he's definitely preyed on that. But that was almost part of the calculus here, is that, you know, whether or not the film bros and all of it's a voter award, whether or not we can go in there and criticize, like, okay, yeah, he's just kind of spamming the spin move, which was pretty cool that he even said, I'm spamming spin move and they can't stop me. In week one against the Rams, he went to work, in week two against the Bucks. I thought he was extremely disruptive. And again, low of competition, whatever. That's a whole separate thing. Whether we can criticize some of those things and like nitpick it from a film perspective, the reality is that the production is going to be there at the end of the year. And now he's already got one game with 4.5 sacks. So the production almost is certainly going to be there at the end of the year. The only thing that I have a little bit of like hesitation about on this take, and like I said, I am doubling down on it for sure. I feel really good about having that one. You come to Matt Harmon for edge rusher expertise always and forever.
You coming out of that one. And that was a great tout.
that's more about knowing the field, honestly. And the reason though I might have some skepticism is, I think the Lions defense has been okay. You know, I thought they really had a good plan against Stafford, and I thought they harassed him. I think Stafford's just a great quarterback. And, you know, I thought in week two, it was okay against the Bucks. They certainly put Mayfield into chaos mode. I give Mayfield credit for scrambling out of the pocket and making some plays on his own. I also think that Bucks offense, we'll talk about the Bucks later on, why I'm really high on them is I think that offense gives Baker a lot of answers, even when the defense takes something away. But again, like I said, defense has been okay. I think there's been a leap there for Detroit. They're not a sieve, but I'd love to see that just even more improvement there. And I think the Lions will be fine over the course of the year. That's the only like minor hesitation I have here. But in terms of Hutchinson, the player, defensive player of the year candidate, I definitely think that's there.
No, it's a good one. I mean, shoot, standing out right now, he's to me the leader just because of just, I know it's two games, but him and like Fred Warner. It's like those are only two I can think of, which is kind of a quasi-tout I had, but that's my lazy dark horse defensive player they pick every single year. Just take an off-ball guy.
This could be the year. Yeah, this could be the year Fred Warner wins it. Yeah.
Just come on. Corner, safety, linebacker. One of those guys has to win. No, but it's when scouting sometimes it's like, oh yeah, level of competition and everything. But you know, going against a backup tackle and everything. Good. He dominated a backup tackle. That's what you want a guy to do. That's what you want a good player to do. So yes, he's getting the production right away. They're a little predictable on the back end right now. That would be my like flaw. It's like they're running man coverage, you know it, so it's like, all right, like if you have the guys to beat it, a Mike Evans, a Chris Godwin, yada yada, that you're gonna beat it.
especially from a slot perspective too. Look, they've gone against two of the best, in my opinion, slot receivers in the league, Cooper Kupp in week number one. Chris Godwin, he's moved back. He's taken over 60% of his snaps from the slot this year, which is almost double what he did last year. And he's mostly been a slot player. That was a big storyline in the offseason. So when he's in that position, he's going to be one of the best slot receivers in the league too, especially because I think Godwin looks more explosive this year than he did last year. Even though I thought he was fine last year, he looks more like the Chris Godwin of old this year. So that's just something to pay attention to with the Lions going forward too. They've got the Cardinals on the docket this week. They have Dortch, but like they don't have a dude as a slot receiver. But then they get JSN
Dortch with an eye roll.
I know I'm like so mean to Greg Dortch, but you and I are on the same page about the Cardinals. We love that they're a big explosive group. Yes. And it's like, then there's Greg Dortch back there somewhere, but he's a fine player. But like JSN Ringo in week four looked really good as I think he's going to emerge as one of the better slots. Then they go on by CeeDee Lamb in week six. So that's the area that I think they've got to clean up a little bit. Cause you're right. They play so much man coverage, especially then that slot receiver. If they're a good player, they're going to have a matchup advantage every time.
Yep. And teams are creating picks and all that. So yeah, we'll see. I like the Lions.
All right. Should we move on to your next one? Cause this one is definitely spicy. I don't think I was on this show for sure when you said this, but Nate Tice, Joe Burrow might be cooked. Are you staying on this one? Are you doubling down? What's the deal?
I am standing pat on this one. I'm staying, holding my hand on this one because, again, I said this with Charles and it was tongue in cheek. And then the tongue is slowly moving out of my cheek as I kind of have watched this Bengals offense and watched Joe Burrow. He just doesn't look right. He doesn't look comfortable. And that is really throwing me off is that they are doing the nickel and dime offense that they have, moved to the last 2 years, but it's more pennies and pennies. They're not even getting nickels and dimes now. The run game, of course, is efficient. They'll get some light boxes because the receivers, even with T. Higgins out, Ja'Marr Chase gets a lot of respect. But the thing is 2/3 of his throws, 64.6%, have been 0 to 5 air yards. Jacoby Brissett is the only other quarterback that's above 60. The league average is 45%. But 2/3 of his throws are 0 to 5. And that's what they've moved to this offense. Don't get me wrong, but nothing is getting attacked down the field outside the one bomb. And then he had one seam throw in week one to Ja'Marr Chase. That was really nice. But that used to be about a once a drive thing. Now it's like once a half. And that is what's missing in this offense. And it's eye test, but just the stats are just showing this. 33% of his throws are even reaching the sticks. Over the last 2 years, it was 38%. He's getting pressured on fewer times this year. Like his time to pressure is 2.78. It was 2.4 the previous 2 years. And even things like he's moving in, he's throwing beneath the sticks. He's kind of passing some things up that I feel like are there. And he's such a smart player that I'm kind of, all right, what's kind of going on here? And again, they're not pushing the ball. It just feels stagnant. And I'm fine because the run game is efficient and Burrow can make it work. But this is a step down from what he showed the last 2 years when they ran this version of the hyper-efficient Bengals offense. On drop back on 2022, so when they moved to this type of offensive attack, he had a 48.4% success rate. That's what you need. If you're going to take five-yard gains, you have to be Philip frickin' Rivers, and you have to hit every single five-yard gain, or late career Drew Brees. You have to. This is my Bo Nix conundrum, which we'll talk about later. But right now, this year, he's at 43.4%, and that is a big difference. That 5%, that's a handful of throws a game where you're not staying ahead of the chains. Only team that has fewer explosive plays than the Bengals this year are the Panthers. Bengals have 6, Panthers have 5.
You don't want to be there.
No. There's 10 teams with 20 or more, and they have 6. I know T. Higgins is out. I get it.
Yeah.
But
I think they have some other useful players,
I know. But Burrow is the issue. And that's the thing. I know, because there's Gesicki, who's actually looking decent in this offense. And who's the Princeton guy?
Yoshivas.
Yes, thank you.
A couple of sick plays in the red zone.
He did.
They
gave him a stool route, which is, they only give that to the top guys. So,
yeah, that okay. Was pretty sick.
I'm keeping my eyes on that. All right. But it's just, they can make this work. They have shown that they can make this work, and Burrow can make it work. It just doesn't have the teeth that it did the last couple of years. And that's when you lose Boyd. Higgins has been banged up. I get that. They're still creating the same amount of yards after catch, though, as they did in the last couple of years. And that's it just does. We need just a couple more explosive plays out of Burrow, because I think this run game is what it is with Zach Moss or whoever is going to be back there. But I think pass game wise, we have to attack the intermediate field. We have to push the ball. Maybe Higgins helps that out. I assume it will. But it's just, he's making me feel antsy. And it's just kind of, yeah, he just doesn't look all the way right, all the way comfortable. And so I'm kind of standing pat on this until proven up. And he's proven me wrong before. So I just want to wait. But right now, kind of just, yeah, I'm holding this hand.
Yeah. Next two teams they play are Washington and Carolina. So
this, that'll help.
That'll help. We'll see if we can get more Jermaine Burton in the offense. I know he's been like, they totally trust him, that whole thing. But pretty impressive route and trustworthiness on his part to go out and win that go route in that game against Kansas City. That was great to see. But yeah, I almost like don't want to take anything away from the Chiefs Bengals games on either side, because nobody backs Pat Mahomes into a corner except Lou Anarumo, apparently, but not at the end of the game. There's always got to be something at the end of the game. Something happens. Always. The refs get involved, the whole deal. It was the right call. I understand why people are frustrated, but it was the right call. So I almost don't want to take anything away from those games, like macro takeaways. I certainly don't know if I want to have big takeaways about Cincinnati when they go and face Washington and Carolina. But certainly at the end of the year, I think that'll be sort of the litmus test of where Burrow is. Because I'm with you that sometimes it does feel like the offense, they want to run with him, and where they are, they need these two alpha receivers on the outside. Or I don't even know if I necessarily consider T. Higgins in that class of player, but like big dudes that can just go dunk on you on the outside. And I think Chase is frustrated. He's playing frustrated. He seems frustrated. So that's a whole nother thing too. Mm-hmm. Is all of this going to get sorted out by the end of the year? And then long term, Nate, there's almost a 0% chance that both of these guys are back next year. So what does that mean long term, if that's what you need to run this offense with Burrow? I think those are all outstanding questions rest away.
And last year, it looked the same at the beginning of the year. Of course, they faced the buzzsaw. That was the Browns defense early. But then he came back. He got banged up again, came back healthy, and it looked okay. It was the 49ers game was an exceptional game. That was great. But again, it's like it's got to look like that every week, you know, not just a couple of weeks of the year, especially if you're going to be the guy, you know, one of these top tier quarterbacks. So yeah, it's just the Bengals just offense is just kind of like, oh, okay, this is what we're doing again, huh? All right. Let's see how it goes. But we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with some more of these takes, whether we're going to stand, fold, or double down on. All right. We are back. Matt, on to your next take. And I like this one. I liked it in real time. And I like it even more now. Sorry, I'm spoiling it. But Matt, your take was the Rams of Los Angeles will finish last in the NFC West. How are we feeling about that right now?
Yeah, let me go ahead and double down on that right now. And I know you come to Football 301 for the high level analysis. Here's some real 301 level analysis for you people. If all your players get hurt, your team's going to be bad. It's honestly, if I was a Rams fan, I don't know how I wouldn't be going insane right now with the way this season is. So honestly, if I was Sean McVay, I don't know how I would be going insane right now. You know, much has been made, and I think it's been great to discuss. You know, McVay's like reinvestment coaching and finding himself as a coach again and investing in these young players after potentially wanting to walk away from the game after 2022, and he's. I had a great interview with your former co-host Robert Mays about this in the offseason. That was awesome to hear. If I was him, I'd be like, oh God, maybe never mind after the way this season has started, man. Because how could you not be so frustrated that you remake your whole identity in the offseason as this, or on the fly, really, maybe into the offseason of last year, and then certainly into the season, you double down on something as this power football team, you know, with these receivers who block, these receivers who are very, very singular. You know, Cooper Kupp, I have always said since he's come into the league, has one of the most singular receiver roles in the NFL. Nobody really plays the position quite like Cooper Kupp. And then obviously Puka last year, he has almost 1,500 yards, and it's not doing it in these like phenom ways. It's almost being like a dirty work type of player. So you have, and then you double down on that this offseason. You get another running back in the draft. You invest into the offensive line, and 3 weeks into the season, it's all gone to man. Their IR list is outrageous. They're going to start running out of spots, man. Steve Avila is on IR. Connor McDermott's on IR, backup tackle. They're talking about putting Kupp on IR. Puka's on IR. Joe Noteboom, who is a backup tackle, he's on IR. Jonah Jackson's dealing with an injury now, too. It's like, oh, thank God we get Alaric Jackson back off his suspension. We freaking need him here. So I just don't know, man. I feel this take is twofold as to why I'm doubling down. One, it is, yes, I'm just concerned that the Rams are already out of players and we're walking into week three. The other part of it is, and I know we'll talk about this team later on, I've really loved what I've seen out of the Seahawks. I know you were higher on them maybe than I was this season. I think you picked them to go to the playoffs. I did not. After the first 2 weeks of the season, I've definitely been extremely impressed with what I've seen out of Seattle, and obviously with the way the Rams are going. Yeah, I think they finished last in the division. Yeah.
And then, of course, our Cardinals.
Your Cardinals.
It's our. It's a football 301 team.
Football 301's Cardinals for sure.
Yes, that's it. But I envision this Rams team. We talked about them in top 10 offenses. We're all excited about them. Was, hey, they're just going to add on to what they did last year, bully everybody on offense, and losing Aaron Donald would hurt, but they'll just get a lot of shootouts. They'll control games. It's going to be a race to 30. We'll see how it goes. Stafford's going to be whipping it all over the yard. Who cares? They're going to pound the rock and whip it. We're good there. When you lose what's supposed to be the focal point of this team and what gets us excited, which, yes, you've mentioned Stafford and Kupp and Puka Nacua, it was, you know, the offensive line being big and burly and just running all over people. So when you lose not only the main guys, but depth, it's just hard. What are you going to lean on? And then when you lose, okay, all right, well, they'll lean on Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp, and Stafford making plays. All right, well, Puka Nacua's hurt. Okay, well, Cooper Kupp will get 21 targets. Okay, we're good here. Cooper Kupp's hurt. Okay. What do we got? DeMarcus Robinson.
Tyler Johnson.
Yeah. Oh, shout out Tyler Johnson. My one stock of Tyler Johnson. That's what's supposed to be the strength of the team. This defense can't stop anybody. They're going to be Swiss cheese. It's, you know, the Cardinals just absolutely had their way with them. They didn't slow them down at all. It was just kind of what I envisioned. Not to say some of their young players aren't interesting. Jared Verse and Byron Young and Kobe Turner, all those guys. But it's not the strength of their team. They were supposed to be built to run the ball and win in shootouts. And yeah, when you pull that away, that's kind of hard to lean on anything. Oh, this is another fun one. I kind of went like half good, half bad here. but it's about the same team.
Okay, well, I can't wait to hear what you have to say about this. So, Nate Tice, you said the Giants will get the number one overall pick despite having a top 10 defense.
Standing pat on the number one pick, I think I'm folding on the top 10 defense. They're going to improve. They're going to be better. I still think they're not going to be bad, but they're missing some pieces, which I kind of figure they're younger on the back end. They're playing well. They do some interesting things. I think they're a year away. Well, we'll see with this regime. Why I think they'll have the number one pick, that if they can't rely on a top 10 defense and you got Daniel Jones at quarterback in this offense, man, and that's all you're doing against Washington, who I think will have one of the three worst defenses in the league this year, you know, potentially. This is just all in all the, and I, why I want to really talk about this, why the number one pick thing is, it just seems rotten right now.
Yeah.
And we know that with Daniel Jones, and we know that whole, all the stuff, the Saquon Barkley stuff, all the stuff we saw in Hard Knocks. But the little isolated incident here that I want to focus on and why I think the Giants are, you know, starting to spiral is the kicker situation with Graham Gano, because this is outlandish. And Dan Duggan, who I worked with at the Athletic, did a great job of highlighting this every step of the way on Twitter. So please check out his timeline. But Graham Gano had a groin injury on Saturday, and new NFL rules are a lot more lenient with your practice squad guys, calling guys up. You can really do it at the last minute. I think you'd have to call them up on Saturday, make them active on Sunday. But a lot of teams will do that as a contingency plan. Okay, maybe a quarterback or a kicker or a punter or a long snapper or anything, just in case that those guys can't go, those specialist roles. They did an early warm-up before the game. Well, first off, they didn't call anybody up. Their practice squad, they had a guy in practice squad, I believe, a kicker, did not call him up. So they didn't even have a contingency plan. Then they get into Sunday, they do a, and this will happen with a lot of injured players, they'll do kind of like a pre-warm-up. Hey, how you feeling? Okay, then we know whether to activate you or not. They needed it because they didn't call up the practice squad guy, so they needed Gano to be healthy. He does a half warm-up, doesn't even do a full warm-up because he's not feeling good. He has a groin, so they tape up the groin. Then, opening kickoff. They didn't even have the punter do the opening kickoff. They have Gano do it. Austin Eckler, your former co-host, takes it past him. He hurts his hamstring on the play, so he's out. Opening kickoff, kicker, done. Wouldn't matter, right? Shouldn't, you know, okay, the punter can kick everything. He misses the first extra point that they have. Then they decide to go for two. The other times, two times they score, fail on those. Then they askew a late field goal because they have no kicker, which would have been like a 45 yarder, and can't even do that. So they have to go for it on fourth down with Daniel Jones, like exactly how you want to do it, how you want to win games. He did complete it. Malik Nabers did drop it. So I do want to give him a little there. Nabers is fine though. Don't worry about it. But Dable afterwards is just like, this is just him kind of. And he goes, we thought Graham would be okay. And this is a quote. He got hurt chasing down a runner. It was a hamstring. He didn't hurt his groin. So it's like, great. Your kicker awesome. Has two leg yeah. injuries.
Yeah. And terrific.
What makes this even worse is they've done it before with the same kicker. A year ago, this happened. Their kicker got hurt. He left with a knee injury against the Jets last year. They missed two early field goals, and they lost in overtime by a field goal to the Jets in week 8. And same situation, same timeline and everything. And it's just, what are you guys doing? Like, these are, if you're not going to have a dude at quarterback, and you're going to be like, okay, maybe we'll have a defense and we'll funky it up in the run game. It's the little things. You have to win in every little way, especially for a team like this that always kind of feels like they're better than they are. So I just want to talk about that because it just seems rotten there in New York. And this kind of process was a great little canary in the coal mine, I think, for maybe that number one pick that might be inbound.
You'll never convince me that Brian Daboll really wanted the Daniel Jones contract and that was his guy and all this stuff. And, you know, I've seen some interviews people have, you know, re-dug up of him and like Josh Allen doing media availability together. And he's like slapping Josh's arm and there's so many good. It's just, I feel like Daboll is one of those guys that, you know, we're not saying he's like a front runner or anything, but when things are good, he's great to be around and he's a good coach. But when things are bad, it sort of becomes this type of stuff. And I just, yeah, I wonder how things are slipping away. I mean, Malik Nabers, the site Fantasy Points has a stat called first read target share, you know, like the percentage of targets and like first read targets that a receiver gets.
100%.
He had 68%. That is obnoxious. I mean, even his overall target percentage from week 2, 64%. They're dangerously close to Mike because he had 18 targets and the team scored 18 points. Not again, we talked about this with Cup last week. That's not the ratio you want. Not because you don't want to throw to your best players. You do want to throw the ball to your best players, but you got to have a second pitch, brother. To. Like, and
you don't want ice cream all the time.
Yes. You know? Yes. And that's great. Obviously the fantasy bros love it for Malik Nabers, and Nabers is a great player. And he's so I think talented. He's so talented, and he's going to make them right. He's going to make Daniel Jones look better than he is. But even the Daniel Jones thing, man, I know Jones is bad. But I almost want to have this conversation with you when we talk about the Saints tomorrow on the Fantasy Film Room. Like, at some point, if you can't get a functional offense out of a quarterback that's top 25 in the league, top 30, maybe Jones is worse than that. I don't know. But he's had his functional moments. If you can't get a functional offense around that, like the Saints have an elite offense right now from an efficiency perspective with Derek Carr. Yeah, if you can't get a functional offense with a replacement level quarterback, I think there's something else. There's something, as you said, rotten there. And that's my biggest worry about New York right now. Yeah, Nabers is awesome. He's going to make Jones look good. He's going to make them right when they're wrong. They just don't have anything else. And the defense part is interesting that you bring up, like potentially wanting to fold on that thing, man, because the front's been great, but the second half, Jaden Daniels diced them up in the second half. And this is an offense I have people, the Commanders fans hate me for this. I have like little to no respect for any of this. You know,
run game's good.
Run game's great. That's yes. always good with Cliff Kingsbury. But 37.9% of Washington's wide receiver targets have come behind the line of scrimmage this year. That's the highest rate in the league. The league average is 11.3%. And dude, I didn't say team targets. I said wide receiver, not like that's throwing out Austin Eckler's targets and Brian, like all these guys. Just I have this offense is that, and in the second half, Jaden Daniels again absolutely carved him out. Second half alone, 18 dropbacks, 16 attempts, 12 completions, 8.69 yards per attempt, and a 100.8 pass rating with one sack. And that's the defense is supposed to be the strength of the team.
And it was in the first half kept getting him. I watched most of the first half. They kept getting him into third and longs and third and extra longs, and Daniels was just scrambling and getting them to like fourth and one, and they give up the fourth and one. And the Commanders are not supposed to be a power team. I know they got Brian Robinson and everything, but you know, they're more finessey. That's how you kind of picture them. They're smoke and mirrors, but they just got every short yardage. They're just like, all right, got it. Thanks for going for on fourth down. Thank you. Except for one in the red zone, which I was very curious about. But they kicked it 7 times. But that is, I thought it was very disappointing to see some of the lack of detail of that defense as far as the fundamentals, like the tackling. That's what it was, because they had Daniels dead to rights a couple times when he scrambled. Daniels is so freaking fast. But is that was able to create some stuff. But it was like, I don't know. I thought this Giants defense would be a lot more sound with that. I do think it's going to be an interesting defense. It's just that they're a year away. They need like two more pieces. They need more depth. But they have some cool, baseline here. Like if there's a new head coach next year, they maybe, keep this guy and because they had some cool pieces. But yeah, right now it was just disappointing to see that, because I thought they got him in a lot of good situations and they kind of just couldn't put him over the top. So that's kind of why I'm folding one of my cards there. It's like, can I draw more cards? We'll just turn this into, 5-card blackjack. All right. So, this was the next one here. I forgot that you had this one. Matt, your next take. Bears, the Chicago Bears, are making the playoffs. Are you standing? Are you folding? Are you doubling down?
I wish I could fold. I wish I could go back and smack myself for this take. And I will be folding right now on the Bears making the playoffs. Okay. I know it's only 2 weeks, but it was very funny doing, research to talk about Bryce Young on my podcast yesterday. And like trying to just look at, okay, let's talk about how the Panthers are so bad on offense. Bears are down there, buddy, man. Like, in terms of adjusted net yards per attempt, they're the worst offense in the league because they can't stop taking sacks. And, I'm curious to get you kind of your temperature on what's gone wrong in Chicago. I mean, where do we start? About everything has gone wrong so far from an offensive perspective. The reason I thought this take would be I thought they'd make the playoffs is because I thought this was a good situation for a rookie quarterback. I'll talk about the offense in a second, but this is a good team. Last year that finished the year strong from a defensive standpoint. I think the defense has been good this year. I think they gave Stroud
in the second half.
They gave Stroud and the Texans some trouble in the second half, which, is impressive. I mean, Stroud is going to make, he's going to make something out of nothing. And he did several times in that game because he's just great. But I thought from a coverage standpoint, especially watching that game back, I thought they did a lot of interesting things and they beat him up front at a couple occasions too. So that part I feel pretty good about. It's just the offense has been an abject disaster, bro. I mean, and I think it starts with a lot and I'm not trying to just get you to talk about the Seahawks, but I do want you to talk about the Seahawks at some point on the show, because I've watched a lot of their offense this year, and especially watching the game on Sunday against New England, I'm like, man, this team has answers against pressure and has so many layup routes built in for the quarterback. And then you think about last year's Seahawks, where they had no answers on third down against pressure, and there were little to no layups in the offense. This year, Geno Smith is top 6 in attempts over the middle of the field. He's like 21st in deep throw rate this year, where he was top 12 last year. Again, just juxtaposing those two offenses, why that's important, because, who's the offensive coordinator in Chicago?
There it is.
This year,
Shane Waldron.
And I don't think this is all Waldron's fault. I think the offensive line was a little overrated going into the year.
I
mean, Darnell Wright got whooped on Sunday night for sure. Those are good edge pass rushers in Houston, but the tackles are supposed to be the strength. The interior is really the problem. And again, Tevin Jenkins did a post-game interview about this, kind of talking about, what are we supposed to do? Like, we're doing what we're told. That sends off alarm bells when we're talking about the answers versus pressure. And I just don't think, Caleb's not perfect, but I don't think there's a lot of answers for him from a pressure perspective either. And I think they're putting a lot on his plate as well, which is tough too. So yep, I'm nervous about the Bears. I'm nervous about how much Gerald Everett and DeAndre Carter and DeAndre Swift are in this. They can't run we're not even talking about how they can't run the ball at all. So I threw a lot out there, Nate Tice, but I'm curious to hear what you have to say about this.
Yeah, I had some Caleb thoughts for later, but I'll just share them now because it ties into the whole offense. And I did think that O-line got overrated this whole process, where we thought it was a great ecosystem for a rookie quarterback and everything. And weakness in the interior O-line is always going to be a big red alarm bell for me, ringing, especially with a young quarterback, especially with one that's a little shorter. So, you never know how that affects them. I always thought Caleb did fine over the middle and throwing short and everything, but it's not his greatest strength. It's more of just like he's solid at it. But it had to be solved, and I was very disappointed with what they went with. And they kind of felt like, yeah, we're good here. Maybe in a year we'll address it. And to me, it was, man, number 18 should be your priority. You know, that, like, I get that you maybe want to push this year because your defense is good and you have rookie contracts and all with your quarterback and everything, but it's like, maybe push that on year two and maybe make them comfortable year one. And then you can add those little things like the DeAndre Swift and Gerald Everett signings. Use that money to pay Lloyd Cushenberry and just have a nice, solid
center. The Bears lead the league in, like, especially on offense, guys you've heard of but are not needle movers. You know, like Swift, like Everett. I know Keenan Allen's hurt, but I even think he's a solid player, but he's not the same guy. So I think there's a lot of name brand value on this offense, but I don't know. Dude, even so much like, okay, I get you trade the pick for Keenan Allen, then you take Aroma Dunze, who I think is, we'll talk about rookies later. I think he's looked fine when, like, I watch him on film as a route runner. But did you need three receivers? Are we overdoing it though? Did you need to take a punter with that, you know, with that pick, like not reinvest in the offensive line? So that sort of, I'm looking back on it and I definitely want to fold on the take of, oh, this is the best ecosystem we've seen for a rookie quarterback, especially, well, you know, and this is just stuff happens, but a lot of it came down to the receivers and Rome's playing hurt. Keenan's not out there. And now we're getting DeAndre Carter targets in the year 2024.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know those DeAndre Carter reps. That's a huge red flag. I had a more cruel joke that I'll save up for off air about it. But my last little stat on this is Coleman Shelton, their center. He's had 26. I looked this up from Next Gen Stats. He had 26 one-on-one pass blocking snaps this year. Centers aren't going to get a ton of those. So they're usually helping and sliding and all that. But he's had 26 this year. He's given up a pressure on six of those. Third highest rate in the entire NFL from your center. That is, it's unsustainable. That's a disaster. One of the guys, two guys above him is the backup right tackle for the Bucs, who just got whipped by Aiden Hutchinson.
Right.
That's one of the two people.
Defensive player of the year, Aiden Hutchinson.
Yes, exactly. I guess, yes. So-and-so right tackle. But I'll say my last little minor thing with Caleb is the pre-snap operation stuff has been excellent already. You mentioned this, that they've given him a lot of reins and controls of the offense, and that's very real. And that's a great sign for long-term stuff, because that means you understand the 101, 201, 301 stuff. And they're like, okay, we trust you to do protections. Coaches do not give that up. Like, they are scared to give it to any quarterback, and you're giving it to a rookie week two in on the road. That's a really good sign for some of the long-term stuff. So I'm not going anything crazy with Caleb yet. It's more just the offense was been disappointing. All right. Moving on to the next one.
All right. So I've been saying this, man, but it's time. So Nate Tice, Colts and Seahawks as playoff teams. So you can take this, the twofer here.
Okay. Doubling down the Seahawks, folding on the Colts, which is not where I thought I would be a month ago. The Colts defense is just too bad. It's just, there's too many good offenses in the AFC, even if offense is all down, yada, 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 that I just don't think they have the horses to keep up with anybody. And their offense is still working it out. I'm still optimistic about the offense, though. I think a lot of it was just, they just had miscues. Anthony Richardson threw that first pick, and it was a classic, like, basketball player doesn't know whether to bank it or throw it into just go straight at the hoop. So he throws it in between the two guys, and it's like, God dang it. And also, it's like, why do you have Michael Pittman on the deep route and Pierce on the underneath route? Just little minor things there. Yeah, just, that wasn't an encouraging game against the Packers. I still do trust what the offense is doing. The run game is good. They are really efficient on first down, especially. They just need, you know, Anthony Richardson just can't have a couple of those mistakes. They can't have eight drops or whatever they had on Sunday. A.D. Mitchell swimming a little bit, a lot of it, where he just looks like he's just has no idea what's going on. And that leads to drops when guys are thinking so much about what they're trying to do. They can't focus on the playing football. And you kind of see that with him. Opposite for Pierce right now. Like, oh, Pierce is playing good football right now.
Yeah, your guy, like, Alex Pierce.
I just sold him too. I was like, I know what he is. Yeah, MVS, you know, and now he's like actually like doing good things. But so the offense, I'm still okay. I'm standing pat on as a team, as a playoff team. I don't think they're going to be a bad team overall, but the defense is just too scary. They can't really, they're average against the run, which is supposed to be their strength. And who's playing corner for them? Anyone listening right now, I'll give you 5 seconds to name their corners. You're not getting it. All right. So that's my take on the Colts. I'll probably have more on Richardson as more weeks go by. He just needs time.
They need Josh Downs, man. I'll tell you what. I really actually think that's going to help a lot, because you're right. Like, Mitchell has some flashy moments as a route runner, but he's not always in the right place at the right time. I think there's been some communication errors that have been put on Anthony Richardson. And look, Richardson, has not been a consistently accurate player ever, and he's not a consistently accurate player right now, but he loved Josh Downs, especially on like second reaction plays when he got into trouble in the very brief glimpses as a rookie. So I do think once Downs is healthy, that could help the offense a lot, but there's some issues there for sure.
Yeah. The run game, they're not going to get there. It's just, yeah, that was not an encouraging game against the Packers. That was kind of, I thought they were going to really take it to them, and they did the opposite. They played scared. As far as the Seahawks, though, this is what it really kind of came down to, was I was encouraged by, of course, the head coach and Mike McDonald and just what he could do, but also the offense with Ryan Grubb, who they hired from Washington, because he runs a lot of efficient plays. The college to NFL jump always gets me a little hesitating a little bit, but this one I was very encouraged by because he did a lot of sound concepts in college, and that has applied to the NFL. It's just what you talked about, their third down stuff, just being coherent. And it's run game, it's balanced. He's also adjusted really well. I thought their second half plans in both weeks have been so much better than the first half, which is great. That is such a good sign, especially for such a young, a newer NFL coach. Geno's been playing well. And I think the defense, while not perfect all the time, is much improved from last year. They have some really cool DBs. Julian Love's playing well. Witherspoon is a star who gets in there on the run. The front is looking good. You know, Byron Murphy's doing some stuff. And yeah, it's just the overall situation. Like, this team is feeling more and more complete. Even if the offensive line isn't all the way there, they're showing answers to mitigate the weakness, which is a sign of good coaching. It's happening as quickly as I thought. Maybe it would take some time. And again, they played the Broncos and the Patriots, so I do have to recognize that. But they look
pretty good,
defenses.
You know, I mean, those aren't like at least from a secondary perspective in Denver. They have Pat Surtain, and you know, he did a great job on DK Metcalf. But then, obviously, I think the Patriots defense looks pretty similar to me. Jerod Mayo was the defensive coach last year, and I thought they had a pretty. What impressed me the most against that game against New England for Seattle's offense was just that. What I loved, and I know you felt the same way about Ryan Grubb's offense, is like the route concepts all made sense together. And that was what was so cool to see, was, I mean, we've got DK Metcalf running in breaking routes and getting targets in space, which has just not really ever been his game. And I don't think that's been a DK Metcalf thing. I think just they were pretty unimaginative about player usage there and running a lot of ISO routes with him and Lockett and a lot of go balls. And I get it that like neither one of those guys are middle of the field. Well, Lockett's definitely not a middle of the field receiver, and DK has mostly been that ISO ball player. But then we're getting him working in breakers and JSN working these outbreaking routes too. Again, it makes sense together. That was really cool to see.
Yeah, it's just sound. It's just good football. Yeah, Seahawks are playing good football. I truly enjoyed watching that Seahawks Patriots game. Like, I tweeted that, and it was kind of like, I wasn't even kidding. I was like, this is just good football, both sides of the ball. I'm really liking this. So, yeah, feeling good about that one. Any of these other ones that you would love to hit?
I'm just lightning round, double down on the Bucks to win the NFC South. And didn't you pick this too, right? So this is a take. But I don't know if you're feeling you want to double down one too.
I feel good about the Bucks. Might be actually just good. Like, not just good for the NFC South, but like actually pretty good. They play good football.
Like I said, I will talk about the Saints on the fantasy show in the film room tomorrow, and I'm definitely encouraged what I saw there, and I'm ready to pat myself on the back for being one of the few Saints offense I'm a little bit sicko excited about it for this, but we'll do my back patting tomorrow. But for this one, yeah, I still think the Bucks will win the South. I love the answers. I mean, like I said, Bucks offense consistently has so much for Baker Mayfield. On Baker, like when he throws to his first read, Baker Mayfield has a 126.9 passer rating. The only guys who have started two games that are ahead of him are Sam Darnold, your boy, and Justin Herbert. So, like, again, definitely with
also
Herbert,
a boy.
Yeah. And then he's obviously, Herbert always makes the right decisions. So, I just love what we've seen so far from him. He's completing 69% of his passes on his first read. You know, the yards per attempt is really high, 10.46. Again, only Darnold is higher here. So, yeah, making big plays, making good decisions. I think the Bucks are just a good team and extremely sound on defense, which that's just classic Todd Bowles.
Yeah, I know. I'm really enjoying watching him. I'll give my last one, and I'm folding on this one. And this was a hotter take, but it was Jets going to have a top five offense. And Jets fans weren't happy with me after the fantasy film room where I said, oh, yeah, I'm a little lower on Breece Hall. At first, I said I was out. I meant to say I was lower, but I did rectify that. But The run game did have some moments against the Titans, but this has not been efficient so far. They're 31.6% success rate on running back runs, sixth worst in the NFL through 2 weeks. Also, Braylon Allen does look really good. Go Badgers.
Yeah, that is exciting.
That is exciting. The passing game wise, I think this offense is more average. I'm not saying bad. I think that's more like the 14th, 16th, 18th offense, somewhere around there. Rodgers still has some zip on the ball, but he's not really pushing it as far as like he needs to hitch up to push the ball. He's a little tentative on it. There's one where he ended up having to bail out, but he was hitching up to hit a wide open Garrett Wilson on a corner, and he kind of just like didn't throw it. And it was just, that's a little bit of an alarm bell because it's like, it doesn't get more open than that. The secondary pass catchers is just why I'm kind of a little hesitant on all this. They're running one-man bubbles for Alan Lazard in 2024. And it's like,
we don't need that.
Yeah, that's not really moving the needle for me. So yeah, I would just say, I do think they're going to be fine, but I just don't think I don't think they're going to hit maybe that upside ceiling I thought they would hit. All right, we're going to take one last break, and then we are going to come back with some rookie check-ins on quarterbacks and receivers. All right, closing out the show, rookie time, the money-making time right here, Matt Harmon. Who's the first rookie quarterback receiver that you want to check in? We touched on Caleb and Jaden a little bit so far, but any other guys that you want to talk about to start this off?
Yeah, I definitely wanted to point out what I mentioned in passing earlier, that Roma Dunze, I think, looks really good especially in week one from a route running perspective. I thought he settled into zone coverage extremely well. I just think Caleb has no time to operate back there, which is tough. And it's definitely on my radar how frustrated DJ Moore looked in week two, only because he really went to bat for keeping Justin Fields. And I'm not trying to cause drama here about like,
no.
You know, about, oh, he doesn't like facts. Caleb or anything like that. But yeah, he went to bat for Justin Fields. And you just got to wonder, a guy that was so productive last year, you know, because I know he just got paid and the whole thing, but these guys are judged off their numbers, they're judged off production. And, you know, people are going to come out of this year being like, oh, DJ Moore had a down season. I guess I'll just never understand. Like, I'll go to my grave wondering why nobody wants to give the ball to DJ Moore in space when I think he almost always makes the first defender miss. But, you know, he's getting these vertical routes and back shoulder stuff that Caleb's just not ready for. I almost think they kind of need to involve Rome more in these intermediate routes against zone coverage. Definitely, I think he's not healthy right now. You could see that in week two, where especially downfield routes against zone, particularly, I think he got off the line of scrimmage well. His work against press still impresses me, but when he's healthier, I think he needs to be more involved. He's one I think is worth pointing out on.
Yeah, he's getting stuck in third and fourth gear. Like he can't hit that last little burst out. I noticed it early on. He had he got a catch on it. Route smooth. You know, he's a smooth route runner for a big guy. But he kind of just didn't burst out of the route. It was kind of ooze out. And I was like, ooh, that's different. That's not you. I've seen you in college. That I know what this is. And
especially in week one, I thought he looked great in week one against the Titans.
And he was banged up in the summer. And we knew this. I'm super high on him. I love Rome. He's one of my favorite college receivers I've watched in recent years, just because he does all the dirty work stuff. He had power slot potential, which, you know, I always love. Roman Dunze is a good one. We talked about Malik Nabers a little bit earlier as well. Had some really nice moments. I'll talk about Malik Nabers' LSU teammate, Brian Thomas Jr., who the receiver for the Jags, who has come out of the gates strong. I thought he might take some time, but he already is a little cleaner than I was expecting. Turns out when you're a really good athlete and you like football, you can really work on these things. But he might be one of the fastest players in the league, period, at 6'4", 210 pounds. His adjustment on that deep ball to Trevor was so good. Just not only burned the guy, but it just looked like a Willie Mays catch. He's not only winning deep, coming down with it. That's a big, big thing. Route running is already looking cleaner. He's already adding stuff. And he just needs to keep adding. It's not like exceptional or anything, but he looks great. He looks how I was hoping to see him at the end of this year, and this is week two. Rest of the Jags offense, not so much, but Brian Thomas Jr. has definitely been a standout guy where it's like, oh, this guy's a real deal one. Like, not now, but down the road. Like, he has a path building to that where it looks very legitimate.
I think Trevor Lawrence leads all quarterbacks in deep throw percentage this year, and you can really tell that's what they wanted to do in getting Gabe Davis, which... okay, Gabe Davis. But like, and then especially Brian Thomas Jr., they wanted two guys, you know, a couple of big receivers on the outside to run the ball well, do play action, and rip these, especially seam routes with these players. I love Brian Thomas Jr. running those deeper routes down the middle of the field. I agree with you. He's looked great. Same thing. Exceeded my expectations. Thought he'd be a player in the long term, but he's been just a dude right off the bat. I think they got to get him more and more and more involved. More trust with him and Trevor is a good thing. So, I don't have a lot of faith in. I'm with you. I don't have a lot of faith in Jacksonville at all at this point. I think I sent you the clip of Doug Peterson, in a press conference when they were talking about Trevor Bank Field. And he's like, I liked it when it's Ever Bank Field, and just deadpan. It's something's going. Something's up there.
Yeah, I know. He like hates him for some reason. It's the weirdest thing. Someone tweeted that, right? Like, when your head coach is your quarterback's biggest hater.
Is your franchise quarterback's number one hater? Yes, that is very weird. But yeah, I do love what I've seen out of Brian Thomas. I'll throw out Xavier Worthy here in sort of I know you and I kind of had some of the same hesitations on Worthy. I'm not trying to hyper-focus on one play, but, you know, when Marquise Brown went out, the common sort of thought was, oh, who cares? Like, you know, Xavier Worthy showed in week one, he's ready to rock. Two touchdowns in week one. You got to remember, one touchdown was on a rushing play, which classic Andy Reid vintage stuff there. You know, he had to be flying high that was Xavier Worthy's first touchdown. And then the second came on definitely a coverage bust from the Ravens. I think when you have to watch this, obviously, on film to see and appreciate it, but, you know, he is creating space for this offense. That alone is a value add. And there's a reason that Rashee Rice is just gobbling up. And Rashee Rice had a really nice deeper catch in this last game too, which is nice to see. That's a little bit of a development. But for his archetype of receiver, he's going to eat with this space underneath. I think we do kind of have to ask some questions about Xavier Worthy from like an outside against press man coverage standpoint. Look, I get it. That's not going to be the strength of his game, but they tried to line him up against Cam Taylor-Britt, who talked crap all week long, and get him against press coverage on a go route. And I mean, he just got smoked on that. You know, he basically is getting pushed out of the boundary, and then Cam Taylor-Britt, shout out to him, makes, you know, one of the best interceptions you'll ever see. But that was a microcosm of, I think, like, that's not the usage for Xavier Worthy. He's going to stretch the field horizontally. He's going to stretch the field vertically, and you're going to have to kind of manufacture ways to get him space on these deeper routes for himself. I do think there's just going to be something missing from this Chiefs offense once again. And I don't know that Xavier Worthy is going to be the one to solve that, as much as I like him as a player.
Yeah, I think some people are misconstrued that. Even when we gave our first fantasy filmer and we gave our Thursday Night Football touts for props, and we were both kind of came without Rashee Rice, it was just like, yeah, Worthy's going to open up space. And it's like, yeah, that's working great. My hesitation with Worthy, especially in this offense, was because he's better off ball, moving around because of his size, his lack of size, is that that's how they use Kelce too. And that's also kind of how they use Rice sometimes too.
Yes.
And 100%. So it's like only one of these guys gets to do that. And so, okay, sometimes Worthy's going to have to be outside versus press. And he is not, I'm not comfortable with that, with a 165-pound guy doing that. And that's what we saw in that interception, is you can't hit your 4-2 if you can't even get off the line. Like that's just hard. Like the 160 showed up more than the 4-2. He hasn't broken 20 miles an hour yet, by the way. Marvin Harrison Jr. has. But ooh, it's,
I didn't know that was, I didn't know you could do that. Even though we have proof of it from previous season.
Maybe it's because he played at a small school with no production. Maybe
under the radar guy too. Not a household name.
Small recruit. No one had eyes on him ever. But that interception was kind of the one little, like you said, it was just a little sample size or a snapshot of like kind of some hesitations with it, where they have Juju in there now to be the size zone beater, but still like, all right, God, you guys need another guy still. All right. Well, speaking of Marvin Harrison Jr., those two touchdowns were fun. Really found that Cardinals offense found their groove. I have some Cardinal stats. I'm using Marvin Harrison Jr. as a way to talk about some Cardinal stats real quick.
Go for it.
They're averaging over 7 yards a play out of three tight end looks, out 13%. 23 of those plays.
Sicko ball.
Both of Marvin Harrison Jr.'s touchdowns were out of 13 personnel with three tight ends on the field, where he's the lone receiver, which is something we kind of envisioned this offseason. The rest of the league has one touchdown out of 13 personnel. The Cardinals have three. And I think we're going to see more and more of it as it's gone away. They're using a bunch of 12 personnel, real 12 personnel with their three guys and with two tight ends. And run game looks awesome. And Marvin Harrison Jr. really does look like just like a bigger Devontae Smith. Like, he's just so smooth. And it's like, it's just, you know, it's hard to press him. He's strong. He doesn't care about guys like trying to get physical with him. He'll just shove them off. Like, yeah, it's Cardinals offense found their groove. Marvin Harrison Jr. found his groove, which is pretty obvious just looking at stats.
Yeah, Kyler Murray threw deep on 9.7 of his attempts in week one, went 0 for 3, according to PFF. And then week two, he threw deep on 23.8% of his throws, went 5 for 5 or 156 yards and 3 touchdowns. Truth will be somewhere in the middle throughout the course of the season. but I think that version of the Cardinals offense is more of what we'll see often. And honestly, his two catches that weren't touchdowns, which is wild to say, for Marvin Harrison Jr. were almost more impressive. And I think indicative of who he is as a player, I think going forward, which is one, the first one was, you know, again, boundary receiver. And Kyler just puts it up to him, you know,
the little back shoulder one,
the back shoulder puts it up to him. That was number one.
That's it.
All people hyper focused on this quote about him saying it's like not his job to get Marvin Harrison Jr. the ball, like, and that got aggregated everywhere. Like, what an eye roll. And clearly you already see the trust in who he knows who Marvin Harrison is on that one. And then also Harrison, I think, returning that trust on the scramble drill play where, you know, Murray goes into creation mode and Harrison just immediately starts breaking downfield, finds a soft spot. Like, that was incredibly impressive to see. That's the savviness, the pro readiness of him as well. So yeah, I week one was, what did I say to you last week? We're definitely gonna always look back on, remember when people worried about Marvin Harrison Jr.'s one catch for 4 yards. I feel like 2 seconds into that game on Sunday, I felt that was gonna be the case.
It's up there with Jamar Chase can't catch the football without stripes on it. That's gonna be up there with one of those offseason preseason takes. That McConkey looks good. I'll throw that one in there as well. Keon Coleman, loving the fit in the offense.
Yeah, he did nothing in week two. They didn't really need him to do anything. But that's also going to be the way I think this Bills offense goes. They're leaning into the run game, as you've talked about. And they have so many fascinating role players.
Yes.
You know, dude, Khalil Shakir, I wrote a piece for Reception Perception, like just brain dump thought about like why he's the ideal receiver type for the modern NFL, because he's smart, he knows where to go in zone coverage, and he's like useful after the catch. To me, with teams playing so much too high coverage, Rashee Rice is kind of this guy too, although I think Shakir is a smarter player, but Rice is developing in this way. I'll give him some credit there. You need guys that one are like, I've always prioritized route runners. I'm partial to route runners, obviously, because I chart routes. Yeah. But at the same time, I think these guys like Shakir, and I think Shakir's a good route runner too. I think he's a smart player, but these guys who can do something with the ball once you get it in their hands, that's how you're going to find explosives, and not even just explosive, like efficient offense. And I think that some teams have struggled with that. I think him just being that guy for Buffalo, I don't know how much volume he's going to get throughout the course of the season, but he's a guy that will have high yield on his targets because he's just that ideal receiver that teams need right now. But Coleman has his role too. And I think that's going to primarily, I don't think he will be doing necessarily the big slot stuff that I kind of envisioned. I think he will be the dunk on you X that, you know, when Josh Allen sees a good coverage look, he's happy to throw it up to that guy. So definitely not. I think if you're wanting to get the most production out of Keon Coleman, I don't think that's the role that you want to use him in. But in this particular offense, I totally see where that comes in.
And that doesn't mean long-term that's going to be his role always. This is how rookies go. And sometimes, people have to understand that. It's not like you always drop a guy in. It's like, okay, he's the number one. It's like sometimes the guy's the number four. And maybe one week he is the number one or number two and all that stuff. But no, great point about the yak stuff. Tackling is, I'll double down on this take. Tackling has never been better in the NFL than it is right now. And yak yards, that's why defense is so comfortable, just like trapping everything underneath. Tackle, tackle. Watch the Patriots play. They just rally and tackle. They'll let you catch something underneath, rally and tackle. And I think it's really good league-wide. Maybe a couple teams, you know, mentioned before, but both of them former Legion of Boom defense coordinators. But the irony. But I do think that a lot of teams are just so good at that. So creating yards after the catch is utmost importance. That was the whole Malik Nabers argument. If you want him over MHJ, was that he can create an explosive play like that. I totally understand that argument.
And speed, like obviously speed's important. Malik Nabers is fast. And, you know, look at what the Dolphins do. Look what the Saints are doing because they have speed right now and how those guys can create yak opportunities. But that's why I think these guys like Shakir and Rashee Rice, and like I think maybe Amon-Ra St. Brown, but like Cooper Kupp is kind of the godfather maybe of this newer modern archetype. Like, you got to play physical after the catch too.
Odunze, this is why you're
I think Odunze long term, you know, will be this guy too. You gotta be a bully in the open. That's what I love about Shakir, man. I just think he's such a badass in the open field. And yeah, because tackling is that's so true. Tackling is better now than it has been recently. You got to take the fight to the defense if you are a wide receiver. And I think that's why guys like this matter. But yeah, Coleman, I think, could thrive in those ways too. It's just going to take a little bit more time.
Yeah. All right. That is it. That was fun. As we wrap up our week 2 recap, good to check back on some takes and flog ourselves a little bit, but that was a lot of fun, Matt. Closing out today, Charles and I will be back on Thursday to preview week 3. Matt and I will be on Fantasy Film Room recording that tomorrow, so make sure to check that out as well. I'm Nate Tice. Find me at Nate_Tice on social media. Matt, where can they find you?
Yeah, Matt Harmon_BYB. Hopefully don't have to flog myself for Deontay Johnson too much longer. Andy Dalton, you're my only hope. When has this ever gone wrong before?
You know, it's funny as you mentioned that Andy Dalton picture. Andy Dalton is like legitimately the average size quarterback. Like, he's 6'2", 215 or whatever. And that's, you see the difference between average and Bryce Young. I know. Sorry. I had to throw that one last one.
We came all the way back to it. Even though we said we didn't want to.
Sorry, Panthers fans. If you like this pod, Carolina, and everybody else, make sure to subscribe to us, follow us, rate us wherever you get your podcasts, or watch us on YouTube. Do both. Also, follow Yahoo Sports on Snapchat too. If you're into that, send in your mailbag questions. We're going to be checking on those as the weeks come on. Football301mailbag@yahoosports.com. Thanks to Brett, Stone, and Adi behind the scenes. Thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks to Matt. See you guys next time.